Greetings and may the peace of Christ be with you. Welcome to Holy Family Radio. This is Deacon Jim Thorndale and I'm privileged to be your host today. I warmly invite you to enter into another conversation in living the Catholic life. Here we are in the Lenten season and I think about all the different words in our vocabulary that bring up different feelings and thoughts in our very psyche. And some words can bring up words of irritation or understanding of a conflict. And I was thinking of a few of those words. You know, bring up the word Republican in a crowd, and you'll get a reaction out of that. Or bring up the word Democrat, and you'll get a response from somebody. I think of the word today, if you would say health care. You're going to get a lot of different opinions on that. Even if you said the word jobs today would be a conflict word because people have different opinions on that. And, of course, one would be if you talk about taxes. All these conflict words that we bring up and people have a real different understanding of what it means or the proper understanding of it. But there is one really that probably brings more conflict in our conversations today with a misunderstanding, and that is the word when we're talking about immigration. And it truly is a situation in our country that needs to be talked about and finding ways as Catholics that we really understand the truthfulness about what immigration is. Today in our studio, I have someone here that is very near and dear to my heart. He is an attorney. He is with Micah Myers, Beckett, and Jones. His name is Nathan Wolf. And Nathan, it's nice to have you here.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's good to be here. You know, I have to tell the audience, the people listening, that I go back to you in diapers, not me in diapers. And, you know, your dad was my best friend, and I've watched you and your sister grow up. And both of you now are lawyers.
That's correct.
And what a journey it's been. For me to sit here and talk to you now is such a privilege because did I ever envision this? Not in my wildest dreams. So we really have a crossroad here in our lives. So anyways, Nathan, you know, I know you've talked to the other radio stations, but on other radio stations in regards to immigration.
Yes.
Tell us what precipitated this. What started this?
This is immigration is something that comes up often in the media and in the news and in Washington, D.C., and now recently in Michigan. And part of the issue is we have an immigration system that in many ways, and many would agree, is broken. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work the way it's supposed to. And Washington, D.C. is looking at issues and ways to resolve that. And so every once in a while, it gets some inertia, it gets some momentum, and people start talking about it again. And that's what really happened a couple months ago when Governor Snyder was giving his state of speech. And he was looking at some immigration solutions for Michigan's economic issues.
Okay.
Part of it was to encourage investment in Michigan. Part of it was to encourage highly skilled workers to come to Michigan and work in Michigan at jobs that we need, mm-hmm. And invest in companies and start companies in Michigan. And so that's a dialogue that's going on around the country.
Can I ask you one question? Yeah, you brought something up about immigration laws, and I'm not trying to be controversial. I just want to get some clarity on this. We have a lot of laws on the books for immigration.
We do.
Yeah, but a lot of the laws we don't enforce. How do we, you know, I know sometimes people think by adding more layers of laws, somehow we get down to an understanding of solving a problem. Right. And we'll touch about this later, but I'm just bringing that up right now because I've looked at how many laws are on the books in immigration, and it's a fairly good amount.
It is. Certainly. The Immigration and Nationality Act is a federal law, and if you just take that act and the related immigration regulations that apply to it, you're looking at a book or a volume of books that are two or three, you know, inches thick each. Yeah. And so it is. It's a significant area of law, and there are several laws that are either marginally enforced or not enforced.
I heard a comment that there's 27,000 laws on the books to enforce the Ten Commandments. I thought that was pretty profound.
I'm surprised there aren't more.
So, anyways, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but no. I had to ask that.
No, and that's something that comprehensive immigration reform is looking at addressing, is our immigration laws have developed over time starting, you know, starting with the advent of our country, with the birth of our country.
Right.
And we often add laws when things come up and we need to address issues that are hot topics at the time.
Sure.
We don't always erase laws. And so the process of coming up with comprehensive immigration reform is, I think, targeted as much at fixing the system as it is streamlining the system and getting rid of laws that are out there that aren't enforced or are antiquated.
Okay. You know, Nathan, I was remiss because I think a lot of times our listeners like to get a little background on who they're listening to because it gives credibility. So just give us, first of all, give us a little bit of your background, where you went to school and everything else.
Sure. I'm born and raised in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I went to Catholic Central High School. And then after graduating from Catholic Central, I went to Michigan State University undergrad. And graduated with a degree in business and pre-law. And then from there, went to Wayne State University Law School in Detroit. Graduated from there in 1997. Served a two-year clerkship with a federal judge in Detroit, Chief Judge Lawrence Zatkoff, who's still sitting in Detroit. Actually, he's in Port Huron now.
Okay.
And then after that, came back to West Michigan, got a job with a law firm here in town, Mike and Myers Beckett. Well, first I joined Warner Norcross and Judd.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I was at Warner Norcross for several years and then moved over to Mike and Myers Beckett and Jones. I started doing immigration law in a serious way as part of my practice probably 8 or 9, 10 years ago.
Okay.
And I continue to do it. I do both family immigration, business immigration, and I also teach an immigration law class at Cooley Law School in Grand Rapids.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. You know, it's always a question I always ask people, how did you find that niche? What drew you into immigration?
Like a lot of things, it was never a planned sort of thing.
Yeah.
I when I graduated from law school, I was very interested in litigation, and I continue to do litigation, but primarily focused on employment litigation. And so that employment litigation context eventually brought me to immigration law in an employment sense. So a lot of immigration work is figuring out ways for your employer clients to bring good people in
right.
to do the jobs they need to do.
Right.
And so a lot of it is a hiring issue that is integral to companies, and that's a service that we offer.
Okay. So as you go on with your story then, we were talking about your job or your role with Mike Meyer at that too for immigration, but more back to the state we were talking about with Governor Schneider.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I just wanted to have people get a background for who you are and your expertise on this.
Yep.
So thanks.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And Governor Schneider, when he gave his state of the state speech, one of the things he addressed was the need to bring in highly skilled workers into the state of Michigan. And he, as part of that process, has come up with a couple of different ideas for doing that, very creative ideas. One is he would like to get a set-aside for master's level employees for the city of Detroit. It's fairly unprecedented, and it will be difficult to accomplish. But Detroit's in a very unusual circumstance as well.
And, yes.
And so what they're asking for is a set-aside of a large number of highly skilled, mastered or higher degreed individuals to come to Detroit to get jobs in Detroit.
Would these be particularly immigrants you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. These would be immigrants. You know, I guess I've never really looked at that statistic, but how many of the immigrants come over here with degrees, masters, and
Yeah, I'm not sure of the precise statistics.
Okay.
As well. And that's one thing maybe to take a step back is when you talk about immigration, there's really two ways to, there's several ways to look at it, but two primary ways to look at it is the difference between a non-immigrant and an immigrant.
Okay.
A non-immigrant is somebody who comes over to the United States for a temporary purpose.
Okay.
Not intending to stay. So it's student visas. Some work visas, temporary work visas, a lot of the agricultural visas are non-immigrant visas. And so in order to get those, you have to demonstrate to USCIS, which is the current version of INS, the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, you have to demonstrate to USCIS that you have non-immigrant intent, that you don't plan to stay here permanently. So those are that's a big chunk of what our immigration is non-immigrants, tourists, students, temporary workers.
Okay.
That's opposed to immigrants. And an immigrant is a person who has immigrant intent. And there are a large chunk of those as well, and those apply to spouse visas. So you marry a U.S. citizen, you want to bring them into the United States, you can apply for an immigrant visa, which results in permanent residence.
Okay.
There are also immigrant visas for work, for certain highly skilled workers. And there are...
Just so people understand, when you throw that terminology around... Highly skilled. What is that classification? Because I'm thinking of an aeronautical engineer, or a, I mean, it could be, but I mean, there must be some criteria for that.
There is. It's generally is related to their education and their experience level,
okay.
And also the technical aspects of their job.
Okay.
So the easy ones are doctors, lawyers, engineers, computer scientists, and those individuals that require, or those jobs that require the individuals to have a bachelor's degree or higher,
okay,
and also some technical and unique aspects of the job that make it difficult.
Okay. Okay. I'm sorry. Continue on again. You were talking about that with the people coming in, or what, yep, Detroit's looking at.
Yep. And so what Detroit was looking at was what Governor Snyder was looking at for Detroit was to try to bring in what are called EB-2 visas. That's employment-based 2 visas. And an EB-2 visa is a person with a master's degree or higher and a level of competence and skill in a particular position,
okay,
that's deemed to be professional.
So okay.
Like we talked about the engineers, mm-hmm, the doctors,
okay,
the architects. And so the idea with what Governor Snyder is saying is let's bring as many of those people in as we can to fill the jobs that we need to have done, and also to have hopefully an entrepreneurial spirit and to start,
yeah,
jobs that would result in additional employment for Detroit citizens,
which is so desperately needed.
Absolutely. And that's why the targeted area of Detroit is very interesting, because it's a bankruptcy and a situation that's unprecedented in our history on that scale.
How would Governor Snyder, I mean, how do you go around hiring these type of people? I mean, is it a lengthy process to bring them into the system like that?
It is. It's governed by, for this type of visa, it's going to be governed primarily by the company. So a company has to show a demonstrated need,
okay,
for this individual.
So does it have to start with the company asking?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a petition process.
Okay.
Company files on behalf of a particular employee.
Okay.
They have to demonstrate that, one, they have the need, they have the position, that it's open. But also there's a requirement that the Department of Labor has that you have to show that there are no qualified American workers who are available to do that particular job.
Okay. I'm going to hit on a touchy little subject right now just because I want to have some clarification. But the company could not petition for somebody who was here illegally, could they?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay, so it has to be immigration status.
It has to be either somebody who's not here,
okay,
who's overseas,
okay,
or somebody who's here as in another job or is here legally.
Okay.
One of the issues with immigration law is that if you ever become out of status, or if you enter the U.S. without permission, you can't, with some narrow exceptions, you can't change your status or adjust your status to have. Permission to be in the U.S.
Okay.
Once you're out of status, you generally have to leave and then reapply to come back in.
Okay.
So that's a process there's a lot that can be discussed about that particular issue, but it is a pretty strong area of immigration law that requires current status in order to change or stay in the U.S.
Okay. So in this program, and it sounds fairly aggressive by Governor Snyder, mm-hmm, would you be somebody that would represent somebody in this situation like this?
This would be something that generally the employer would need the assistance of an immigration lawyer to prepare the paperwork and process the application in such a way that could result in an approval.
Okay. How long would something like that take?
It depends on the visa, on the particular type of visa being requested. But it can be a 6-month process. It can be a longer process.
Okay.
It largely depends on how many are being applied for, and kind of where you are in the queue once you get your application into the USCIS.
I'm just trying to get a handle on this. We're talking about immigration status that they have to be here. Is there not enough people, qualified people within our own country that are interested in these type of jobs? Or what is the reason? What's the purpose for this?
I think my answer to that question is no. I don't think there are, at least with respect to some of the highly skilled positions that are out there. I think it depends on who you ask in large part. There's probably a big segment of the country that would say, no, there are plenty of people here that can do the jobs. I think what's clear and what has been made clear recently is that some of the most vocal advocates for immigration reform when you talk about high-skilled labor are business owners.
Right.
Business owners are out there trying to find people to do their jobs, and we have a very restrictive immigration system that limits the number of available visas for those particular positions.
Okay.
And they're finding it very difficult to fit within that system and get the people over here that we need.
Would a company be, and not just within the understanding of our legal, of our laws, but are companies limited by the number of people they could have in that status in their corporation?
Yes. There are restrictions depending on the type of visas. You can't, there are certain visas that you have to demonstrate that you're not foreign labor dependent.
Okay.
And if you have a significant number of individuals who are foreign labor, then there's a different process and a different filing process that you have to go through.
Okay. For those of you who have just joined us, this is Deacon Jim Thorndahl. This is Holy Family Radio, and I'm talking with attorney Nathan Wolf from Mike and Myers Beckett and Jones Law Firm on immigration. Now a return. Nathan, what do you see how do you see this program coming forward? I mean, what do you see the ambitions of the governor as for this?
I think the primary ambitions for the governor are to bring in individuals in the state that can help grow our economy. And so he's not only is he looking at the set-asides for Detroit, which is in a very unusual and sad situation, but he's also looking at trying to make Michigan a regional center for entrepreneurial visas.
Okay.
And this is a particular type of visa. It's called an EB-5, Employment-Based Visa Number 5. And what that says is if you can demonstrate that you're going to come into the United States and invest a significant amount of money in a business, and you have to show that, one, you have the capability to invest, and also that this business has a plan that can grow and increase the number of jobs available or the jobs needed to run the business, then you can get a visa to come into the United States, and oftentimes it's a permanent residence visa.
Okay.
But this is a significant investment, and we're talking about $1 million investment minimums for the most part.
Okay. You know, nobody takes on a venture like this. Even in the Gospels, say nobody goes to fight a war without the proper armies, or nobody starts to build a house without the proper building supplies. Governor Schneider must be in contact with businesses to bring this program along, because just to do this in hopes that you can grow the economy or grow Detroit would be kind of counterproductive. I mean, how integral are these companies that we're talking about in dedicating themselves to try and grow Detroit?
That's a very good point. I think he does have to be very close with those driving forces that bring in the revenue, bring in the investment, and bring in the workers into in the jobs that workers need to fill in Michigan. Governor Snyder started the Office of New Americans. It's a new program that he started recently, and he appointed Grand Rapids native Bing Goey to head up that program. And it's gotten that program has gotten a lot of press. It's moving forward, and I think having somebody as accomplished in the business community as Mr. Goey will help to move that forward.
Yeah.
And provide opportunities for investment in Michigan.
Wonderful. Now, you know Detroit firsthand because you live there.
I do. Yeah.
And I've been a resident of Michigan my whole life. I haven't lived my whole life, but since I've been alive, I've seen Detroit and. We've watched the decline. I mean, you saw it firsthand in many areas. You were living right downtown, correct?
I was, yeah. I lived downtown for several years.
I mean, you really saw pretty much the crumbling of the infrastructure down there when you were there, correct?
The infrastructure was crumbling well before I got there.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, it was a... It's a challenge of unprecedented levels of what's going on in Detroit, and I have every faith that we're hopefully moving in the right direction by going through the bankruptcy and hopefully coming out stronger.
Yeah.
But it is an enormous challenge. We're talking about a city with a large geographic arm and very limited resources to figure out how to govern all the people in that city. So
I heard a statistic. It said Detroit used to be 1.8 million in population, and they've gone down to 700,000. I think that's accurate. You ask yourself, where's the tax structure? Where's the base for the revenue going to come from? So this is probably an absolutely needed program to rebuild Detroit, but it's going to be a monumental task in that. Were you surprised to see Governor Schneider come up with this program?
I was, especially as it relates to Detroit, because I haven't seen any precedent for it. There certainly have been set asides or visa opportunities have been set aside for certain professions. Like if we have a nurse's shortage, they will say, okay, 15,000 of these visas that are available on an annual basis can be go towards nurses or doctors or whatever the issue is that might be a shortage in labor. But I haven't seen a geographic set aside. Maybe there has been, but I've looked at it and I haven't found anything like that. So it's a creative idea.
Okay,
it certainly is a creative idea, and it is targeted at getting at or solving a problem that's much bigger than just immigration.
Yeah.
But immigration won't solve it, but any investment in the city will go towards improving it.
Okay. But when we're talking about this program too, we're talking about the geographic Detroit area, right? We're not talking about the suburbs.
That's my understanding.
Okay. Yep. So this is trying to grow the city back of Detroit. And it wouldn't, we all know we got very tied into automotive in the Detroit area, and that became part of their demise in that too, is we lost that manufacturing ability down there too. So I'm sure he's targeting new manufacturers coming, because aren't we giving some tax breaks in the state for manufacturing now to get them in here again?
I'm sure that's part of it is rebuilding and re-energizing our manufacturing sector.
Okay.
We certainly have a lot of talent in Detroit, engineering talent. That given the proper investment, given the proper opportunities, could certainly keep that going. And you really do see a trend in manufacturing of going to where the skilled labor is. I mean, one, you can do it cheap, or two, you can do it more efficiently. And what at the end of the day is less expensive and better for a business.
Okay.
And a lot of businesses, I think, are seeing that we may have to pay more for our labor at times, but if it's efficient and highly skilled, it works out better than sending it to some place that can just do it cheaper.
Exactly. So, as when I started out, we were talking about the hot topic or the words that kind of bring a little bit of it, raise the hair on your neck a little bit. The Republicans, the Democrats, talking about health care and jobs and even the word taxes. But, I guess one of the real hot topic issues now is not just immigration, but illegal immigration. Yes. And, that's a problem we have to solve, because we've got, over 11 or 12 million illegal immigrants in this country, and it isn't even a practical solution to send them back.
No.
I mean, that makes no sense,
right?
Because they're here, and for whatever reason and however they got in here, we have to deal with that problem.
Right.
How do you see that as a lawyer?
One of the issues with comprehensive immigration reform, one of the targets of it, and actually probably the primary target of it, is to shore up the borders, or at least improve our security system that we have in the United States. And when we say borders, the image that we all have is the southern border of the United States.
Arizona, Texas,
yeah. Sure, and there certainly is a lot to be said for shoring up our physical border of the United States. But improving our border security also involves border security at airports. It could involve the immigration or the customs service that goes on in Chicago or anywhere in the middle of our country.
Right.
So
because they come in from all Canada.
Right.
All these things over the bridge in Detroit.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, there have been immigrants trying to get, I shouldn't say immigrants, but people trying to get into the United States that do it by boat. They'll take a boat from wherever to and park it just outside of the United States and then try to get in that way. There are tunnels underneath some of our borders that people try to get in. And that's a big problem, and that's a part of what comprehensive immigration reform is trying to solve, is look at how to protect those borders, both with a physical border, with customs improvements at the airports, and with having systems in place that actually punish illegal entry when they're caught. So it's a problem that we have, but it's one that we need to move forward and fix, because we certainly, you know, when President Reagan had this amnesty program almost 30 years ago now, or more than 30 years ago, he said there were at that time about 4 million undocumented workers or undocumented people in the United States, and he had an amnesty process where they could get status in the United States through a petition process, and it worked. I mean, we got a lot of people, a lot of status, tax. You know, we got fees from the revenues and from the filing fees and all that. But what didn't happen was there weren't proper laws in place to stop employers from hiring undocumented workers. And so if you can fix the border, but if you don't fix the magnet, what's causing people to come into the United States, people are going to find a way here.
So in many ways, we look at employers who are really taking advantage of a system of the illegal immigrants.
There are many employers, and I certainly won't point to all of them, but there are a significant number of employees who will hire undocumented workers, and people know that.
Yeah, so this gets back to the homeland where these immigrants are from, or the illegal immigrants, and I'm sure they think, you know, it's worth a try to come into our country because they know they can get hired by someone. Now, if you be an attorney, you can answer this question much better than I can. The company's, first of all, in violation of the law if they hire them, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Do they have to pay them and take taxes out of their or do they just pay them cash? I've never been really sure how that works.
Yeah, I think it would vary from company to company as to how they do it. But, yeah, they certainly, in some cases, they'll pay taxes, but it will be to a fake ID number.
Okay.
And so there's never really a connection between the individual getting the money and the taxes that they're paying into the system. Other times they'll just pay under the table and pay cash.
It's such a huge problem. When you say that, I think of how convoluted then the IRS system has to be, and that they can't pick that up. I mean, we've got to fix more than just the immigration then.
Right.
We've got to fix the system that doesn't find them on the radar screen, because if companies are doing that, I think of how they're writing it off as a write-off for their payroll and everything else too. So the system is broke.
Right.
Yeah, as you're saying.
Right. When you go back to when you kind of weave in taxes to the whole discussion, it really does complicate it and make it interesting, because one of the primary ways that we determine whether somebody is authorized to work in the United States is a Social Security number.
Okay, great.
And a Social Security number was never intended to be in any evidence of work authorization. I mean, it's intended to connect a person with their tax liability.
Okay.
So part of the evidence of demonstrating authorization to work is showing your Social Security card. Well, we all have Social Security cards, and there is zero indicia of connection between me and what's on that Social Security card. My picture's not on it.
Right.
I signed it when I was probably 11, and so my signature looks different. But, you know, the only thing that's the same is the number. So the part of the process, I think, for improving the laws that require proper documentation is improving our identification system. Having work authorization information on cards that's readily available. There certainly are privacy issues with that, and those need to be addressed. But what we require of employers is pretty difficult. I mean, we can sit and say that employers are wrong because they're hiring unauthorized workers, and there are many that are. But we also require employers to be experts of document origination and fraud. And it's a very difficult process. And there are sophisticated systems in place that make fake documents.
Yeah.
So improving that process of demonstrating work authorization, demonstrating your ability to work and take a job in the United States, is one that's absolutely vital to making this process work.
I would think so. You know, as we're listening, I do have some documents in front of me, and being a Holy Family Radio, a Catholic radio station, I'm always digging into the understanding of what the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops was saying about immigration. And, you know, they put out many documents on this, too. And, of course, as an attorney, you know, I think the biggest problem we have in this country today is getting a simple matter of Democrats and Republicans to sit down and have this conversation. Because it always turns into a political conversation rather than what's best for human beings. And how do we get past it, Nathan? I'm asking an age-old question.
Let's talk about that now. Yeah. That is a problem. And it's a huge problem when you talk about immigration, because not only do you have divides in Democrats and Republicans, but you have divides within their own parties. There's a large segment of very conservative Republicans who advocate against immigration reform, advocate against any changes other than strengthening the border and increasing prosecutions.
Right.
And that's a viewpoint, and it's a fair viewpoint. But there are also a very strong part of the Democratic Party, the Chamber of Commerce type, the business community, who's saying we need immigration reform. We mm-hmm. need to look at this closer. And so even in the Republican Party, there's a divide.
Yeah.
Same thing on the Democratic side. There's a very socially conscious part of the Democratic side that would say we need to assist people that are in need. Everyone says that, but there certainly is that part of the Democratic Party. And then there's another group, some labor groups that are saying, no, we need to protect American jobs first and foremost.
Right.
And so that makes this immigration even more complicated than just being
intense.
Democratic and Republican.
Yeah, sure. I think about what you're saying because, you know, I don't think of in my lifetime I've never seen such animosity, and the chasm gets wider. The anger grows more, and the lack of conversation grows even stronger, where we're not communicating, and nobody wants to listen to the other person's viewpoint and come up with a resolution and how to solve this problem.
Right.
And that's a sadness. But I'm looking at a letter here by Cardinal Timothy Dolan, and this was November 7th of 2013. And he was talking on immigration on behalf of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. And he did say, to be sure, Catholic teaching supports the rights of sovereign nation to protect their borders. In our view, immigration reform would protect the rights and restore the rule of law while upholding the human rights and dignity of the person. And then he goes on to say, as a moral matter, however, our nation cannot continue to receive the benefits of the work and contributions of undocumented immigrants without extending to them the protection of the law. So this is the problem we're in, right? Is looking at these undocumented workers and how do we offer them the protection of the law? How do we extend that? What's the process? And I guess I'm asking you a question we haven't been able to solve yet, correct?
That's correct. I mean, it's a significant problem. You talked about 11 million undocumented workers in the U.S., and of course that's an estimation because most of them live off the grid. We don't know where they are.
Right.
So it could be more, it could be less. But that part of immigration reform is significant. It's making sure that the people who are here in the United States, many of whom came here in the United States without any real choice.
Right.
There are many people in the United States who are here illegally who came as kids. They were brought across the border, you know, tied to their parents.
Okay. I just want to interject. I'll go back to that. If an illegal immigrant comes in this country and has their child here, is that child automatically an American citizen?
Yes.
Yes.
The Constitution.
I just want to clear that up so people listening would know that. That's what I presumed, and that's what I've been taught. Yeah. Sorry, I want to just get that in because I think people have to have an understanding of that.
That's a big part of it too. People want to just look at this with a broad brush and say, illegal immigrants, 11 million people, and you talked about would it be possible to deport all of them, and I don't think it would.
No.
And one of the reasons why it wouldn't is you're talking about mixed families. One of the things that the Catholic bishops often advocate is reuniting families,
yes.
And keeping families together. And when you'll have a mother and father who come into the U.S., and maybe they come in illegally, so neither of them have status,
right.
But they have a child in the U.S. Now you have an American citizen. So
right.
You can't depart mom and dad and leave baby here. That is not practical, and
exactly.
It's not moral.
Yeah. And that's why we need to have this discussion today on Holy Family Radio, is because people have to have an understanding that goes much deeper than just that person or that person who's here illegally, because there's so many, it's so intertwined into their families and everything else too, that it makes it difficult to come up with a solution that everybody can be happy or live with. Let me just pick up a couple things here. Cardinal Dolan was saying, as we have communicated in the past, we urge you to pass in its final form immigration reform legislation that, first of all, establishes a fair and achievable path to citizenship for the 11 million undocumented workers in the nation. That seems to make sense.
And that's one of the big hang-ups.
Yeah.
Part of the divide in Congress right now is where do you stop? And where we start is pretty much agreed upon, is that there are a large number of undocumented people in the United States, and you have to have a process to get them status, to normalize their status, to make them tax-paying,
okay,
productive members of our society. So that's where we start, is getting them to fill out applications and get their status in place.
And, you know, one of the biggest pushbacks is you're going to hear that people who went through the process legally, they spent years to become citizens, and you know their pushback is, why should somebody who came here illegally get a bye?
And they're right.
Yeah,
they're right. They're absolutely right. If there was a way to go back and get that process and start that process over for everyone, that would be the preferred way.
Right.
But they're absolutely right that there are a significant number of people here who invested a lot of money, a lot of resources, a lot of time, a lot of sweat,
yeah,
to do it right. And there are other people that crossed.
Yeah.
And that's an unfairness in the system that, yeah, I'm not sure is terribly repairable.
Right. You know, and again, that's why we're having this conversation, so that people can see the difficulty of coming up with a legitimate way for the illegal immigrants to come in. And as it says here, a fair and achievable path. Well, who decides what's fair, and who decides what's achievable? That's an issue.
Right. And those two things are oftentimes at different ends of the spectrum.
Right.
One is fair, and so you would require fines. You would require payment of all back taxes while you were here, you know, while you made income.
Right.
You'd require evidence that you lived here over a certain amount of time. And so that's the way that proposed laws are trying to achieve that fairness, is requiring those individuals to pay up,
yeah,
what they should have paid before.
The problem is you can't get blood out of a turnip.
Right. That's the achievable part.
Yeah.
Right.
So
exactly.
You know, that can be a moot point at some time.
Right.
But
exactly.
And so
you can't say the fine's $10,000, because then you won't have a single person sign up for it, or, you know, very few people.
Exactly.
You can't say the fine's $10, because then it's not fair to everyone else who invested a lot of money. So that balance is part of the discussion, part of the dialogue that's going back and forth.
Yeah.
And then the last part is the pathway to citizenship. That's a hot button issue, because there are certain elements of especially on the Republican side, who would say that, no, we shouldn't have a special pathway to citizenship for these individuals. They broke the law. We'll normalize their status, maybe give them a preferred or some type of status in the U.S.
Right.
But to allow them to get to citizenship faster than others, no, that's not fair.
Yeah.
And so that's a hang-up, and there are discussions going back both ways on that, as to whether there should be a special pathway for this process, or whether you just get in line with everyone else.
Yeah. And either one is going to get pushed back from somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
Here we are in the difficulty. The second thing they say, Bishop Dolan writes, is creates a program that permits future flow of migrant workers to enter safely and legally and with appropriate protections. How do you interpret that?
I think what he's talking about, especially with when we talk about migrant labor, we're not necessarily we're talking about some a group of people who are different from or in a and different from immigrant labor.
Could we be talking about seasonal labor?
Exactly. These are people who don't have an intention, or at least not a stated intention, to come and stay here.
Okay.
Their family's back in Honduras or Guatemala or Mexico.
Okay.
I want to come here, work for a season, and then go back to my family. I don't want to stay in the U.S. I want to stay with my family.
Of course, but and then the problem then comes too is they get in the country,
Right.
And they don't
Things
leave.
Might change. Things might change.
Yeah.
And that's what I think what the bishop is talking about is if you can have a system where they can come in legally, work legally, have fair work, fair wages, fair housing, all those, you know, not taking advantage of their status of being of needing to do that job or being that desperate.
Okay.
And then the process is they would leave afterwards, and then they could come back the next time the season comes up. And so that was a big part of immigration or a big part of our economy for a long time.
Right.
And part of what we did was we tightened those visas up, and so they're not very easy to get. Sometimes
okay.
they take a long time, and there are limited numbers that are available. But two, we made if someone had came across the United States and either fell out of status or came across illegally, we put significant penalties on their ability to return. And so, and it makes sense from a lot of perspectives. You, if you're here in the United States illegally, you shouldn't be able to come back very easily.
Right.
But at the same time, it creates an incentive for people to stay. If people know that if they leave and it triggers additional penalties that would prohibit them from coming back,
yeah.
it's a pretty easy answer to just say, well, I'm going to stay.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to leave because as long as I stay and stay under the radar, I can stay.
And that's the operative word, stay under the radar,
right.
because it's really what happens.
Right.
And, you know, we lose a lot of them. We lose a lot of students on visa programs.
We do.
We can't find out where they're at.
Right.
So, I mean, it's such a massive undertaking. It really is. I can see why we have such difficulty in coming up with a solution for immigration. The third thing that Cardinal Dolan was talking about, too, is reaffirms family reunification as the cornerstone of our nation's immigration system and expedites the reunification of families based on marriage as the union of one man and one woman. So that's what you were talking about, is perhaps they come in here and they have a child.
Right.
How do we tear that family apart?
Right. And that's one of the moral dilemmas with immigration and with enforcement of our immigration laws, is when you see a law in the book and a law says you cannot be here illegally or without status, to say, okay, enforce that law is one thing. But to see the people that it affects and it impacts the enforcement of that law, it makes it difficult from a moral perspective.
Yeah.
Maybe a legal perspective it's an easy answer. But from a moral perspective, it does make it difficult to look at dividing families. And also, I think what he's also talking about is not just the division of families, but the unification of families.
Right.
And that is, if I'm here in the United States legally, I'm a lawful permanent resident or I'm a non-immigrant worker, and I want to bring my spouse in to either stay with me or live here permanently, there is not a very good way, outside of being married to a U.S. citizen, there's not a great and efficient way to bring spouses of
yeah.
permanent residence into the U.S.
Yeah.
It's a very long process. In some cases, there's 10, 15, 20-year waits to bring in family members.
Let me ask you, this thought just came to my head. What would be the legal recourse of a child who was born in this country to illegal parents, and we deported them all? Would that child have legal recourse to their citizenship?
That child certainly would remain a citizen of the United States. And I think you raise an interesting question, is do they have any legal right to be in the country that their parents are being deported to?
Yes.
That depends on that country. In some instances, the answer might be no. For the most part, I think countries, as long as you're the child of a citizen of the country, you can attain citizenship or you're given it automatically.
Okay.
But that, I don't think that's uniform. And so there may be an issue with the legal status of a child born in the U.S.
Okay.
Sure, in a foreign country.
And, you know, it gets curiouser and curiouser as you read these, because what you're saying, I can see why, as we go along, just you and I conversing, and on some type of same plane and thought, where this could become a terrible, terrible dilemma within our Congress and our Senate, within different thought processes and everything else on how we view immigration. If you and I can sit here and talk for hours on this, imagine what it would take just to pass one single law on this.
Right.
Yeah, but
right. And we can see how we've gotten to the position we're in and
yeah.
how much of a stalemate we're at right now.
Yeah. Here, number four, he says, restore basic due process protections to immigrants, including protection against unnecessary detention.
Yep. I think that part of that process is, you know, the idea of immigration reform as an enforcement mechanism. In the current enforcement mechanisms that are in place, there are two ways to deport someone. The one way is if you catch somebody in the United States illegally, you can go through a civil deportation process in immigration court, and you can have them deported.
Okay.
And it takes some time, and there are some rights incumbent with that on the person who's going to be or is. The government is trying to deport,
mm-hmm.
But you don't have a right to an attorney. You don't necessarily have a right to even a deportation process in your own language in some
okay.
cases. And so it is a process that one is fueled by the sheer mass of people that we're trying to deport.
Right.
But two, I think that the balance that the bishop is trying to get at is we need to instill or enforce or ensure certain fundamental rights for those individuals, because we're talking about a significant penalty, even though it may not be strictly enforced as a criminal violation in
right.
these cases, but it's still a penalty. I mean, to kick someone out of the country is a significant
yes.
penalty,
yes.
and in some ways, it could be a jail sentence.
Yes.
There are also penalties on the books, and I was reading an article about this recently, where there is increased enforcement of the criminal violations that are related to immigration, and that is if you come into the United States again after being deported, or after being barred from the U.S., or after once entering illegally,
mm-hmm.
You can be prosecuted in federal court, and that. Those prosecutions are increasing in recent years, and it's becoming a big part of our federal court docket.
Yeah.
And what that usually does is once the people are convicted, they're not necessarily deported. They're put in prison, and then they're deported.
Nathan, just from a practical standpoint, what does that cost us?
It's significant.
In terms of dollars and cents, that's got to be huge.
It's significant. I do some work in immigration court, and the dockets in immigration court are enormous, and I'm talking about Detroit and Michigan. And
yeah.
In Michigan, we certainly have immigration issues, but I'm not even talking about Arizona and
yeah.
Florida and Texas and what their dockets must look like.
Oh my gosh!
In some circumstances, I'm waiting 2 and 3 and 4 years for hearings on
really?
Deportation cases.
Oh my gosh! Oh my! So that and the clock's just ticking and the dollars are rolling.
That's right.
Oh my
That's
gosh! Right. Once again, this is Deacon Jim Thorndahl with Holy Family Radio, and I'm here today with Attorney Nathan Wolf from Michael Meyer Beckett and Jones, and we're talking about immigration. And we're just actually right now we're talking about a letter written by Cardinal Timothy Dolan, going over a couple of the highlights of his letter. And I'm here talking with Nathan. And Nathan, the fifth point that Cardinal Dolan makes, he says, enhanced protections for refugees and asylum seekers. Enhanced protection for refugees and asylum seekers. Tell us about that.
Asylum is really one of the, in my view, is one of the bright spots of American immigration law.
Okay.
I mean, it's an opportunity for the U.S. to say, we understand that you are in a situation in your home country that would or has a very high likelihood of resulting in death or unfair imprisonment.
Okay.
And because of that, if you can demonstrate that to us, you have a place in the United States and in asylum status and an opportunity then to become a permanent resident at some point. It is one of the areas where we really can be a welcoming country for individuals who just by mere luck of birth
yeah.
are in a place that is either war-torn or there's political issues going on or there's dictatorships and
right.
unfair governments that are prosecuting individuals for religious choices, for personal family choices because they're handicapped.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are all sorts of reasons why asylum is a really good thing. I think what the bishop is getting at is making sure that we don't forget that when we look at immigration reform to be a place
yeah.
That's welcoming for people who around the world are in situations that they find themselves that they can't help.
Exactly. You know, and the last point he makes is examines the root causes of migration, such as poverty and persecution, and adopts policies that addresses these push factors. So there are these factors of the poverty and persecution that really pushes people to immigrate.
Yes.
And to come in and to come in illegally.
Yes.
Because many times they're impoverished, their family has no food. I think as a father and as a grandfather now, what I wouldn't do to feed my children.
Right.
And that's kind of what we're looking at today, isn't it?
It is. It is. You can't look at immigration reform without looking at the two factors. And there's the push factor that the bishop talks about and the pull factor.
Yeah.
And both of those issues, if you don't address both of them in some way, you won't get an answer on immigration reform because people will travel, like you said.
Yeah.
How far would you walk to feed your family?
Yeah.
People will travel to get in a situation that they think is a better one for their families.
I mean, in many ways, you see how people will put their own lives in peril to get into this country because they're desperate.
Right.
They're desperate. And I guess, you know, here we are addressing the same problem. How do we fix immigration like that? How do we make it so people don't have to put their lives in jeopardy to provide for their families?
That's a great question, and it's one that you really have to understand. I think when you're addressing these issues at a congressional level or in D.C., that a recognition that there are push factors that are out of control, that a natural disaster, Hurricane Mitch, might hit Honduras and Guatemala,
yeah,
and there are going to be people there who are destitute, and to say that's their problem isn't a Catholic answer, certainly, to the question.
Right.
And so our immigration system has to recognize that there are wars, there are situations that are out of people's control, that we have an opportunity to help people.
Yeah.
Whether it's to help them in their own countries or to help them with a place to land in situations where there is no choice.
Right, right. Let me go a little bit farther, too, because the Catholic Church's position on immigration reform, and this was done by the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. This is back in August of 2013. They were talking about a comprehensive immigration reform. And one thing they said is that, in light of all the things we've talked about, many unauthorized consider the prospect of being apprehended for crossing illegally into the United States a necessary risk.
Yeah.
Even after being arrested and deported, reports indicate that many immigrants attempt to re-enter the United States once again in the hope of bettering their lives.
Yes.
And that's what you talked about.
Yes. We put a lot of resources into our southern border, and they were in a lot of cases they were necessary. There was insufficient monitoring of our border and allowing people to just walk through. And so there have been increases in the physical structure, as well as increases in the electronic monitoring and the ways that we can help prevent people from coming over.
You know, you brought up the southern borders. They bring it up here in this next paragraph. It said, adding to this very human dilemma is the potentially dangerous nature of crossing the southern border.
Right.
Smugglers looking to take advantage of would-be immigrants, extort them for exorbitant sums of money, and then transport them to the United States under perilous conditions.
Yes.
That's human trafficking.
That is. What we're looking at is a situation where we've expanded our physical wall, expanded in through Texas and into certain places in Arizona. The fact of the matter is there are places that are too remote, too dangerous for even a physical wall to go, and too difficult to actually build. But that what we're doing is we're pushing the people to cross in those areas.
Yes.
We're talking about massive deserts, mountains, very dangerous regions physically. But you mentioned it, the human traffickers, the very people who are very good at bringing drugs and guns into our country. The increase of the wall and the difficulty of the crossing has created a cottage industry for them to add to their clients, and now they're bringing people into the country. And so it's a very dangerous situation. There's there's some very good books out that I've read on this topic. One is Enrique's Journey, where it talks about a young child's journey into the United States. And some of the things that he had to go through, whether it's the bandits who would rob the train that he's sitting on top of, or just the physical problems with the geography and the cold and the warm that can wear on you and can be very dangerous.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You know, and I'm just looking a little bit farther ahead on Catholic. You and I, be both Catholic men, we have to put a Catholic eye on this too, because it forms our conscience and it says who we are. And it says, you know, the Catholic Catechism instructs that the faithful, that good government has two duties. The first duty is to welcome the foreigners out of charity and respect for the human person. I think sometimes we look at it as illegal immigrants less than human, and we tend to take away their dignity as a human person, when in reality they're the same as you and I. They're trying to have a better life. And that's something we have to address as Catholics, mm-hmm. and really look at that in light of critical thinking of Catholic teaching.
Right.
And it's forced me more and more to do that as a deacon of the church, because I firmly believe in what the church teaches on that. So it's a moral dilemma, as you said previously. It's not just a legal dilemma; it's a moral dilemma for many of us.
It absolutely is.
Yes.
And it is an issue that we have to remind ourselves that that these individuals. That are trying to cross aren't there are I'm sure there are some that have some nefarious intent involved,
of course,
but I think that in those we have to address, but the vast majority are people who are trying to do better for themselves and for their family.
Yeah.
And it's a process that we need to fix and recognize for that purpose.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. And you know, and the second point they make is the second duty is to secure one's borders and enforce the law for the sake of the common good. Sovereign nations have the right to enforce their laws, and all persons must respect the legitimate exercise of this right.
Absolutely.
That strikes down to the how we can protect ourselves and the flow of illegal immigrants. We have to find a way to make an orderly process.
Right. And I don't think there's an immigration lawyer. I don't think there's an immigration advocate out there who would say just open up your borders and let anyone in.
Right.
And just like on the other side, I don't think there's anyone who could say, you know, put a bubble over our country and don't let anyone in.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a balancing that has to be done between ensuring the safety of the people through enforcing our borders and enforcing our laws,
yeah.
To recognizing that there are some significant gifts that are out there in immigrants, whether it's the highly skilled PhD person or it's the, you know, the all down to the person who's yep. helping at the farm.
Yep.
There are some significant gifts that they have that can make our country a lot better.
Yep. And, you know, and in the finality of their talk, it says the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops opposes enforcement-only immigration policies and supports comprehensive immigration reform, which makes absolute sense, because we can't have all of one, none of the other, because it makes it unbearable and unmanageable.
Right.
And that's why we need our legislators to come together to make this happen.
They do, and I think they're over the last several years, there have been periods of inertia, periods of momentum to get legislation passed,
mm-hmm.
and things like the DREAM Act that talks about individuals who come into the United States as children without any real conscious choice of their own,
right.
And who find themselves in a situation being high school, college students and not having any ability to get permanent residence
exactly.
to get any status in the United States.
Exactly.
So there are laws that have been discussed that can deal with those types of situations, and unfortunately, with anything in politics, it's all there's a lot of timing involved.
Yes, there is.
And so a lot of this is kind of getting pushed to the wayside, at least currently, in with presidential elections coming up.
Nathan, I just want to thank you for being here today. The time went by awfully fast, and I had a million other questions to ask you. But, you know, just in light of what you brought in with Governor Schneider, I'm going to continue to pray for the success of that program, because it is vital to restoring our state, the state of Michigan. And for the United States of America, we need to take this whole conversation and have it on an intelligent, rational level where we can come up with a solution that makes sense for all of us. Because, you know, the reality of it is, the problem's not going to go away. We're going to live with this, and we're going to have to find a way to live with it peacefully. And that's our hope. But I thank you for being a part of this in the forefront of immigration, because, you know, what you do is really help enforce our laws, but you help people to come to a better life and a better understanding of living in this country.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here, and it's my opportunity and pleasure to do what I do professionally to represent the
country. And with the few seconds I have left, thank you again, Nathan, for being here. It's been my privilege, and for all of you listening to us on Holy Family Radio, we thank you for being here, and may God bless.
Thank you. You've
You've been listening to Living the Catholic Life with your host, Deacon Jim Thorndale, on Holy Family Radio. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with a friend, audio copies are available online at holyfamilyradio.net. Thank you for listening.